Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Friday, the 21st of April, and I'm recording at, let's get this right, that is 9:20 p.m., and that's British Summer Time here in London. Okay, this being Friday, this is the big picture long-term outlook for the various asset classes, starting first with stock markets, which I think is by far the most important of the asset classes for most subscribers. And where are we in this cycle? Well, you get an awful lot of people telling us that the Fed should be very worried about stock market levels. Others saying that they've run way ahead of what Donald Trump has been able to supply in terms of economic stimulus programs, and that's certainly true. And you have others who are pointing out that the global economy slowed in the first quarter, and it has not yet picked up here in the second quarter. And they can see the evidence of that in falling bond yields. So there's a growing amount of nervousness here overall, but not much aggressive selling. And performance does vary considerably among different sectors. And you will not be surprised to hear, well, you'll probably be very aware of this, that big US tech shares continue to do exceptionally well. They're sort of edging higher in here in this environment. I'm talking about Facebook, Google, Amazon. So still, they look overextended, but they've looked overextended for a long time, and they're still going up. It's absolutely marvelous performance. There's obviously some momentum buying there. Now, what about the other side? Well, we've seen mining shares and oil shares come off quite sharply in the last 2-3 weeks. We have also seen, more importantly in terms of leading indicators, we've seen financials weaken, and they've come down. They've given up easily a third or more of the sharp rally that they had following Trump announcing, or following Trump's election victory. The overall patterns that I look at, a lot are up near resistance levels among indices. Wall Street still remains very firm, so it looks more like a ranging consolidation, I would say overall. And a lot of indices just treading water here right now. Now, should we be worried? Well, I wouldn't want to pay up for anything. But how big a risk is all this? My own hunch is that it's an environment which can easily produce some corrections, certainly setbacks, certainly lengthy consolidations, but I don't see the danger of a big bear market. And if I don't see the danger of a big bear market, I'm really quite inclined to hold on to positions, particularly where good yields are actually available, or where good momentum plays are actually occurring. At my age, I've got more yield plays than momentum plays, but I may balance that out in the not too distant future. We'll see. So, as people analyze these stock markets, we know that there is some increasing caution. A lot of it's coming from hedge fund managers, and the biggest and most dangerous game for hedge fund managers for a number of years game that has ruined some of them, forced them into retirement, and greatly reduced their funds, is that they've gone heavily short and tried to talk Wall Street and other stock markets down. And, well, you know the results of that. It hasn't been very successful. Oh, they'd have to be like Houdini to get in there and short and then get out with a decent profit relative to the risk. So why is that? Well, I think we could say that there's a lot of liquidity sloshing around in the global economy. Now, that may be contracting a little bit. For instance, the U.S. is not contributing anything like the liquidity, the U.S. Federal Reserve, that we have seen previously. But then again, in Europe, you've had Mario Draghi repeating for a long time that I'll do whatever it takes. And there's plenty of liquidity sloshing around there. The same is true in Japan, China, from all reports, had thrown a lot of liquidity into the market, although it's not doing very well on the back of that. That's had a very limited effect as far as stock markets are concerned. But, you know, if I draw that together, those points together, and say, are monetary conditions tight? No, far from it. Monetary conditions are still extremely accommodative for the most part, and that's quite important. And then we say, what about competition? Well, are bond yields doing well? Well, they've done quite well over the last month or so during the nervousness that we've seen in stock markets. But I think that any global strategist looking at bonds and their 35-year bull market, which I maintain is over. But any strategist looking at the two markets is going to say that the better long-term value right now is very much in favor of equities. So that's an important point overall. And then what about political factors? Well, it's amazing what markets can put up with. They can certainly put up with a lot of uncertainty here overall, because investors are not going to worry too much about isolated problems or minor details in terms of the overall big global picture. They're really saying, are stock markets going to be doing better over the medium to longer term? Are economies going to do better over the medium to longer term? And I think the answer they come away with to both those questions is pretty much a yes. So again, just to wrap up on that, I think we could see a longer consolidation. We could get some shakeouts. That's quite likely overall. That's why I wouldn't pay up for anything. But a sharp pullback, I feel, would be very much a buying opportunity rather than a selling opportunity. If you're going to sell, I think the time to do that is if you have the good fortune of having something running up so sharply that it looks overextended relative to its 200-day moving average. But on the other hand, you know, if you do that too often with something like the tech shares, you don't get back in without paying higher overall. So it's not a bad environment for equities. It is less exciting than it's been at some other times. Thus, a little bit of caution. Okay, what about government bonds? Well, you know my view, and I've given the game away for those newcomers who are just hearing a big picture audio for the first time. But what happens when you get a 35-year bull market in terms of falling yields? Does that mean that it'll go on in perpetuity, or does it mean that that's really very, very unusual and likely to perhaps end in tears. And to me, the answer is the latter. They can change slowly, though. And that's been the case with bonds because of the slow GDP growth, and also because of the lack of inflationary pressures. A lot of that's due to technological efficiencies in here, which lower costs of production, make business operations in general more more efficient. But are the modest yields that are available here today, are they worth the medium to longer term risk? Well, some people obviously think so. A fair number of people obviously think so. I don't think so. I think that what we're more likely to see is that with low yields, when confidence does pick up in stock markets, that you get more shifting from the fixed interest sector into equities. Now, so I would be very cautious here, and we have had this rally on the weak first quarter plus. So anybody who does hold those bonds, I think that's another opportunity to get out at no doubt a good profit if you've been holding them for long, and to stay out. Now, and just go back to stock markets for a moment. I think I probably covered this, but if I haven't, I want to slot it in. What sector is going to do best? Well, I think it's the one that has been doing best, and that's technology. This is the technology era. To be more specific, it's the era of an accelerated rate of technological innovation, which has no natural end other than a doomsday rock. And I'm not going to forecast that. So, really, it's a very interesting story. Now, the thing about tech that we have to be careful about, watch for, is that you can get situations where, you can get rapid obsolescence, and given the rapid developments that are occurring in the tech sector. So thus we need to use charts quite extensively. As long as they're performing well, then that's I'd be relaxed about them. Okay, so like stock markets overall, but a little bit more likely to sort of underperform here in the short to medium term. Remember, that happens in 2Q and 3Q of the year more often than not. Okay, and what about government bonds? So I've already covered that. I think that really one's living dangerously in here, because when the global economy does actually pick up, and I would certainly think that would be happening later this year or in 2018 for sure, those bond yields are going to push up, and one will see capital erosion at that stage. And what about currencies, as David takes a little drink of water? The situation for a number of years is that no country really wants a strong currency, although some can live with a stronger currency much more effectively, successfully than others. The ones that can live most comfortably with a strong currency are those that are highly developed economies. Whereas the opposite side, you get primarily commodity-producing economies, and strong currency can be devastating for them. Now, the biggest economy in the world is still the U.S., and that will remain so, I think, for quite a while. The U.S. dollar is certainly the dominant currency in here overall. The U.S. also has a president who is very determined to keep it moving much higher, and has certainly been successful as we approach the end of his first 100 days of office. But, you know, and we've got four years here overall, at least, of Trump, and how's that actually going to play out? I think that as the U.S. economy, which has slowed a little bit here, like many others, so far in 2017, as that picks up again, that will bring the Fed back into play. I think the Fed's on hold here right now. They are very confidently talking about at least two and possibly three more interest rate hikes this year. But we'll see in their next meeting, but I think they're going to go quiet in here. And they're in no hurry to raise rates further. And they would anticipate they'll probably wait until they see evidence of the U.S. economy strengthening once again, which will certainly occur over the lengthy medium term if it doesn't occur over the shorter term. Meanwhile, as far as other currencies are actually concerned, and other economies are concerned, a ranging dollar, and it is certainly very much ranging, it doesn't add any pressure overall. There are a lot of developing economies that borrowed in dollars when it was somewhat weaker. It was easier to buy in dollars, obviously, borrow in dollars, obviously. And they would be under pressure if we saw a strong run to the upside. The U.S. economy would be under pressure. U.S. multinational companies would be under pressure if the dollar rallied up too sharply. So that's not happening here right now. And I don't think we can extrapolate this ranging pattern too far into the future. But right now, you know, there aren't any big worries here in the currency markets, in my opinion. Now, speak about the UK, because we saw the big bounce on sterling, a lot of short covering. It's currently at 1.2804 here against the greenback, so still pretty steady overall. I think people are making a mistake in terms of looking at Theresa May's decision, a wise decision in my opinion, to call for a general election to be on the 8th of June. They feel that she's likely to get a large majority compared to the 17-seat majority that she currently has. And I think people are right. I think she'll get a good majority. You have to be a little careful about elections, but that's my view. I don't think she'll be. I would say 380 seats at minimum, and I'd like to see it closer, or even over 400. But it'll be a significant majority overall. One, because Theresa May has proved very credible. Most people like her. In contrast, we have Labour in absolute chaos. They'll take a beating overall. That's going to be the main story here overall. But a lot of people, the point I wanted to make was a lot of people will say, we are likely to get a softer Brexit because May has this strong majority. She won't be under so much pressure from right-wingers on the back benches. Now, I think that's a kind of a minor point. I think the backbenchers will be quite supportive of Theresa May. And I think people are over-optimistic about, if that's the word for it, about any kind of soft Brexit, which I would prefer to interpret not as staying locked into European laws and trade agreements and trade limitations and migration pattern and all that. I think by a soft Brexit, I would say that maybe we get a sensible process of negotiation. We don't have anything terribly dramatic. We get an agreement of mutual interest between the EU and the UK. Now, that would be very nice. I would love to see that, but I don't think it's going to happen. And I think the UK, and the EU, very much under pressure. We take them at their word. I don't think it's just bluff here. They want to stretch out these Brexit talks for as long as they possibly can. Why? Because, of course, they get more revenue as the UK is still within the EU. And they would hope to, they may give up on this at some, though they will give up on this at some point, but they've been hoping all along that the UK might say, well, no, this is too difficult, it's too complex, we're going to stay in. But that's purely wishful thinking. But more worrying, what they are also thinking, the EU people are also thinking, is that they want to keep all the other 27 countries in line, and that's not going to be that easy. As we know from the elections that are coming up, the French elections, and particularly the Italian elections. So I think it's going to be a hard slog, as many of us have said for a long time. And what I actually think the Prime Minister, Theresa May, will have to do, and she'll have the mandate to be able to do this without causing political chaos or another immediate call for election, is that she has said earlier on that a bad deal is worse than no deal. And I would hold her to that point, and I think she's absolutely right. And I think that to get EU negotiators to sit up and pay attention and reassess the path to their best interests, that Theresa May will have to say, I'm pulling out, and pull out quickly. A long, torturous negotiation, I say, will be more expensive, it'll be morale-sapping, it'll be frustrating, and that's what the EU will want, because they're shooting themselves in the foot to a certain extent, in that the UK is one of the two net contributors to the EU, the other being Germany, of course. They will be alienating the UK on the basis that difficult Brexit discussions will send a message to other countries that are thinking about their own versions of Brexit and deter them from doing so. There's plenty to read on this subject, as you probably know. So I think we are going to have to see a fairly quick exit, unless Europe completely changes their attitude and on this. And I see no reason why they should do that. And so we would have to leave and just be on a WTO, World Trade Organization, basis, which is hardly the end of the world, but that would cause a lot of uncertainty and chaos and concern, not least among UK companies and foreign companies that have divisions within the UK. And I think that needs to be anticipated so that those corporate heads can be talked to. So on just to put them a little more in the picture. But my feeling is that once we were out of the EU, albeit with the WTO rules, that then the pressure from European companies, not least in Germany, to get back in and renegotiate with the UK would be absolutely enormous. But I think we will probably have to force their hand in that respect, to talking about the negotiators' hands, with an initially hard Brexit, and then expecting before long, I think it would be relatively short term, that we would see more sensible discussions resume in everyone's mutual interest. So that's the way I envisage that playing out. That's my guess. Of course, I don't know any more than anybody else how that will actually play out. But I think there's a certain logic to it, I'll put it that way. How will that affect sterling? Well, if it pushes sterling back down, it's to say relative to this, so 128 here today, I don't think that's certainly not a problem as far as the UK economy is concerned. I mean, it'll increase inflationary pressures a little bit more, but it'll also make the UK more competitive, more attractive to foreign companies. So I think overall, my guess is that the that sterling has probably seen its low against the dollar for this cycle, but probably also will not go up really much further until the UK is completely out of the EU and people are relaxed about whatever the Brexit details actually are following further negotiations. And at that point, I would expect a competitive UK economy with a phenomenally strong financial sector. I would expect it to be pushing sterling higher, doing the UK doing well and lifting sterling in the process. But that's at least a year ahead, probably longer. Okay, so wrapping up here on markets, what about the commodities? It's an interesting sector. All the uncertainty is certainly very supportive of, certainly supportive of gold. These markets are now running away with themselves here overall. Commodities in general are in a corrective phase of their own right. But what we have seen over the last year or so is that when precious metals have been knocked down sharply, it has paid to go in and start accumulating and to look for recovery rallies. Will gold do better than tech shares? Not beyond the very short term, in my opinion. I'd keep an eye on crude oil here overall. It's down again today. Again, my own feeling is, and it's the only thing that makes me nervous about this opinion, which I've had for some time, but that it's widely held, that you got a downside just at around 40, slightly below $40 a barrel for the WTI and Brent crudes, and that above 60 it gets a bit expensive, and that's because U.S. Frackers will push out a lot of crude oil on the move to the upside, and I think that will remain the case for really a good while longer, with one possible exception, and that is that the Saudis want to float a chunk of Aramco, and I've mentioned this in a number of audios, and they obviously know that they would get a better price for it if the oil price was stronger. So we may see a temporary move to the upside, but I am adamant, as I have been for at least a couple of years here, that upside in terms of crude oil will be limited to temporary spikes, either caused by sharp drops in production. Remember, with commodities, supply is always the key variable, and the capacity of the world to produce more crude oil has never been better. Again, thanks to technology. So I think, again, think in terms of that $40 to $60 range. If the Saudis somehow succeed in getting it a little bit higher, good for them, but it won't last. And that's the situation we have. Meanwhile, the renewables continue to become more and more competitive, and that process is occurring now more rapidly than people have expected. And I think we should assume that rapid development of the renewables, and I'm talking now mainly here of solar and wind power. Wind power, I was not optimistic about it 3 or 4 years ago, so it's been a pleasant surprise for me here to see how efficient some of these very big offshore wind power complexes have actually become. All good news for the very long term. And in the very long term, I'm quite optimistic about a global secular bull market for equities, because we have rapid technological innovation, which makes everything more efficient. We have cheaper energy, which is fantastic. It's not so great for the windmill makers or the solar power companies, but it's brilliant for economies, which save so much money in terms of energy costs, and the same applies to corporations, of course. And I think that, again, in terms of commodities, agricultural commodities, that's always a matter of supply. It depends on what happens with the weather. And right now, most commodities, agricultural commodities, are prices are relatively subdued overall. Things will liven up in another couple of months as new growing seasons in the West become more important. And industrial commodities, they need stronger global GDP growth, which I think we'll have by 2018, if not sooner. But stronger global GDP growth would firm those metal prices up once again. But as you know, those commodities, those industrial commodities, are a highly cyclical industry. They've certainly seen a good pause here recently. My hunch is that the overall bull market move, cyclical bull market, is for them is not quite over. And on that note, this audio is coming to an end, and I just thank you for your interest and wish you a terrific weekend. All the best.